evening. As you might well have gathered, my name's not Bond, James Bond. Isn't it odd? No, I can't do that. It'll spoil the image. You actually think I'm like James Bond at the moment, don't you? Yeah, that's the right answer. All right. When you think of James Bond, what do you think of? What's the first thought you come to? Womanizer, yeah?
Boring.
Murderous, yeah. Martinis, sorry? Alcoholic, yeah, he's always drinking. Jaws, yeah? He always defeats the baddies, yeah? Aston Martin. Do you think of somebody who's in control? Yeah? Whatever situation you put him in, you know, he can be sort of bundled up, sometimes stuck in a coffin, stuck in a crematorium, set on fire, but he always gets out. You know, he's sort of crashing down the side of a mountain, there's people with machine guns, paragliders, whatever, after him, but he always comes out on top because he's in control, isn't he? Well, the stuntman's always in control, yeah. You think of somebody who can save the world, yeah? Out of all the agents they send, I'm thinking particularly of the World Is Not Enough film. There's a start sequence, you know, where he pursues the baddie. And then, I don't know whether you remember it, if you've seen it, but she takes off in this balloon, hot air balloon. Then the helicopters come. And to sort of stop herself being captured, she actually shoots into the gas of the burner. So it's going to hit the gas and explode. He lets go and he drops down, he hits the Millennium Dome and he dislocates his shoulder. So when the mission comes to chase down the baddies, everybody who's there except him gets the briefing. Nobody had to watch it to fit in, all right? But he still managed, even with his dislocated shoulder, whichever one it was, he's only got two. He still managed, right, whichever, I don't know, whichever one, he still managed to get the baddie, you know. He pursued the baddie who was going to go for world domination, etc., and save the world. Yes. And that's what he does, yeah? Did you see him in Casino Royale? He's playing the poker, you know, big wheeler dealer, he's sort of there. He's the one who wins out in the end. And he's the one who plays for very high stakes. Yeah? We can trust him, can't we? We can put the world in his hands and he'll come out on top. But how do we deal in situations where we're the wheeler dealer? Admittedly, much lower stakes. Nobody's going to come to us and put the world in our hands. But are we the ones who can be in control? Are we the ones who can be trusted to come through? Are you good at wheeling and dealing? No? If you're in that poker game, you know, where everything's dependent on it, can you be the one with a straight face, even though you've got the royal flush that's going to beat every other hand? Not Julie. I remember there was one time when Stephen was sort of getting this sort of poker chips thing, and Julie had been dealt two aces. And there were two aces there as well. So she got four aces altogether. Yeah, put more chips on. And everybody sort of looking and thinking, this is unusual. She must have a very good hand. And she had. But she showed it. Whereas in the film, you know, people have got nothing or something or everything. And the faces never change. Are you like that? Can you be the one who puts that face on that doesn't change no matter what hand you've got? Can you always get a good deal? I know I can't. Do you know, when you get into a situation where you're buying and selling, perhaps, I've been there at numerous occasions where I think I've got everything worked out. Maybe you're buying a car or a motorbike or whatever, and you go in and you're thinking, oh, well, I can knock it down on price because of this and that. I can do that. And you can guarantee that if it's me, I'll be lucky if the price stays the same rather than going up. Yeah? There was one time when I bought this latest bike, I thought, yeah, you know, the chain's worn out, this, that, and the other. And he wouldn't budge on price. So eventually I ended up paying what he was after. Now, if you got somebody like Mark, it'd have been half the price, you know. But that's not me. So don't rely on me to get a good deal. But can you get a good deal? Do you know what a good deal is? There was one time when I was selling a car and I was talking to some friends at work. And I said, you know, I was going to be selling this car. And they were saying, you know, how much are you selling it for, this, that, and the other. And one of the guys says, well, what's the lowest price you'd take for it? So I told him, he says, I'll give you that. I thought, I didn't even know you wanted to buy a car. I've just told you what the lowest price is going to be. And oh, no, you know, blown it. Can't be trusted. But often you find that prices are fixed by what people are prepared to pay. You know, there isn't an actual price for something. It's what people are prepared to pay. You talk about buyer's markets and seller's markets. And you can guarantee that if it's me and I'm selling something, it'll be a buyer's market. Or if I'm buying something, it'll be a seller's market. But how much are things actually worth? Some people always seem to know what the right price is. And other people, like me, don't. Have you ever heard the phrase, you know, the price of everything but the value of nothing? Where you got the price, but you don't actually know what the real value of the thing is. So how can you value things? Sometimes you get sort of generally agreed prices. If you are selling cars or something like that, you go to Parker's or Glasser's Guide, and it'll give you a year, a model, a mileage, condition, and it tells you the rough price that you ought to be looking at. And really, that's the price that the market sort of settled on. You know, you can't say that if you took into account every nut and bolt and all the hours that's gone into actually manufacturing it and how much wear and tear, you'd come to that price. It's just a price that somebody's willing to pay. But you know, sometimes, and you'll see it, I'm sure, where there's an agreed price, not that anybody's sort of come on and said we'll do this, but it's just a price that's been settled on in the market, and somebody will come along and either have a price that's miles above it, and then wonder why it's never sold. There was a bike shop that I went to, and you could guarantee that if there was a value for a bike, theirs would be £1,000 more. Not surprisingly, they're not in business anymore. But you can go the other way, where there's an agreed price for something, and you're selling it for way below what it's actually worth, or what people will pay for it. You know, you're being robbed in many ways. You're robbing yourself. You're offering something for less, a lot less, than perhaps somebody would be willing to pay for it. They'll come and they snap your hand off because it's a great bargain, it's a deal. Graham Kendrick wrote a song, and the line, or one particular line in the song, said this: so how much do you think you are worth? So how much do you think you're worth? What is the value of a person? What price would you put on a person? You might say that's a very strange question, but are you aware that people are being sold and bought in this world? It's estimated there are 27 million people in slavery who've been sold into slavery. 27 million. There's a price. There's a price on a person's life. Do you know, in some extreme situations, people can even sell themselves to pay off debts, to get out of situations. You know, in the fictional world of James Bond, he'd be the one who came in and rescued people in those dire situations. But this is real life. And there is no Bond, there is no cavalry coming over the hill. And unless something happens, they're going to remain in slavery. You see some instances in the newspaper where people have suddenly got out. There was even a situation in Sheffield, yeah? Where people were in slavery in Sheffield. And it just boggles your mind, doesn't it? You know, how can this happen? So what's the market value for a person? How much would you be willing to sell yourself for if push came to shove? What's your value? Would it be valued by bond or something else? Matthew 16:26 says this. Quoting Jesus, it says, "What good will it be for someone to gain the whole world and yet forfeit or lose their own soul?" Well, that seems like a reasonable trade. The whole world, everything in it, for your soul. People are paying a lot less than that, aren't they, for slaves? But you see, in many ways, God was fixing a market value. He was giving us an estimation of how much people are worth. And he's saying that even the whole world is not enough. The whole world is not enough. He set the market value when he died in our place. And he said that is so much more valuable than everything in the world. So if you take less than that, you're doing the sort of deal that I normally get, and you're selling yourself short. You're actually selling yourself for less than the market value. Do people do that? Yes, they do. Many accept less than the whole wide world. Perhaps a comparative short time of pleasure, doing your own thing. What passes for enjoying yourself? Freedom. Doing whatever you like. You know, even I can get a better deal than that, because God has said the whole wide world is not enough. A price has been fixed, and the price has been paid on the nail. For human souls, for your soul, for my soul, for each one of us. Jesus gave his life for each and every one, and that's worth so much more than this whole wide world. Jesus is saying the world is not enough. We should never sell ourselves short, because he has put a price on each one of us, and we should accept nothing less. We never should believe the words that have come from perhaps other people, and sometimes even ourselves, that says, "We are worthless. You are nothing." Jesus said, that's not true. He said, the world is not enough. We can say, I'm a failure, I'm useless, I'm rubbish, I'm of no value. And Jesus says, the world is not enough. There's somebody greater than bond who set the price. He set the price for each one of us. And boy, is that a colossal price. He thinks that we are, each one of us, of incredible value. So much so that all the treasure this world could ever offer is not enough. The question to each one of us is this. If Jesus has paid such an enormous price, an enormous amount, what are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about it? Whatever we do about it, remember, the world is not enough. Thank you.